Hi, I'm Elise Lamel, Legal Content Specialist at Krauss Financial Services. I'm joined today by a wonderful guest, Susan Chalgen. Susan is an attorney at Chalgen and Tripp, a law firm located in Michigan, where she primarily specializes in elder law, estate planning, and special needs planning. She is an active member of NALA, as well as a board member of several committees, including the State Women Lawyers Association of Michigan and the Elder Law and Disability Rights section of the State Bar. On this episode of Elder Law Interviews, Susan will be walking us through ways an SBO trust can be used to help senior clients in a Medicaid crisis planning scenario, and how this Michigan-specific spend-down strategy can compare and complement a spend-down with a Medicaid-compliant annuity. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So today we're going to be talking about SBO trusts and how they can be used as a spend down tool. So for some of our viewers who maybe aren't as familiar with this tool or this strategy, can you kind of walk us through what an SBO trust is and how it works?
Sure. So I typically say with Medicaid planning, it's like a shell game. A lot of times we're just moving assets around to play by the rules and get the best advantage possible. So an SBO trust is something that Medicaid policy specifically allows as a non-countable asset if it's created correctly. So our goal is to simply create a trust that's written within the means of the definition and policy to allow for the assets that are moved into that trust to be non-countable. Effectively, what that does is it takes you from a larger countable amount of assets to a smaller countable assets. And that's going to make you eligible for the program faster. The different things that the SBO trust has to do, there really isn't a lot in policy, but implied, we've got a written document. It's going to restrict access. It's going to stay in the ownership of the spouse specifically. So it's for the benefit of the spouse and it's within their net worth. It's just not available to them.
Okay. So kind of similar to a Medicaid compliant annuity, but with its own perks. So how common are these sole benefit trusts or Medicaid compliant annuities when it comes to being a part of a client's crisis spend down plan?
Very common. I mean, when you're seeing an attorney, you usually have assets over a certain amount. If you're already eligible, if you're very close to eligible, then my consultation is going to be, this is how you quickly become eligible or how you do the application. But if I'm involved in the planning, you usually have excess assets that are over a number that you're just going to buy a funeral with. And in that sense, we're probably talking about using one of those two buckets, the Medicaid compliant annuity or the SBO trust or both, to do a plan. So very, very common.
What are you looking at then when you're meeting with these clients? Like, what are the primary advantages of using an SBO trust versus a Medicaid compliant annuity?
That's a really great question because it does come down to the way that the assets are. So the huge bonus of an SBO trust is that it can take assets that aren't liquid. So for example, the family is eligible except for this cottage they have up north. SBO trust can take ownership over a deed and the property can stay property and still be protected, something an annuity can't do. The huge advantage of a Medicaid compliant annuity is that they can take access of a retirement account and keep it qualified funds. So something about a trust is that if it takes ownership over that kind of an account, it will trigger that to be a full surrender of a retirement account, which means tax consequences for all the assets inside. And that can be a huge hit to a plan. So with a Medicaid compliant annuity, those retirement assets are protected. So knowing exactly what the assets are and then being able to put them into the two right buckets is going to be very valuable to the client.
Absolutely. I think that definitely is going to be a good determining factor. So when you're working with a client, is there anything specific? I know you touched on how the assets were held, whether they're in real estate or otherwise. Is there anything else specific that you're looking for to help you determine whether an SBO trust or an MCA is more appropriate for a client?
Other factors that are circumstantial of the client themselves or the spouse themselves. So one thing about a Medicaid compliant annuity is it's going to pay out over a specific period of time and not be available for potentially a longer period of time. An SBO trust that can be restricted tighter. but then available sooner. So depending on what fits for your community spouse. For example, I use the retirement accounts for my Medicaid compliant annuities because of the tax benefits to that. And I also know that most people weren't going to touch their retirement as quickly as they would, say, a cash account. So that retirement can be spread out over a few years to pay back, and my spouse isn't going to be hindered by the restriction. Whereas if they have $120,000 in cash, they might want to just drop it into a trust that can pay it back to them within a year, so that if something comes up for them, they have access to that cash very quickly.
Okay, that makes sense. What about when it comes to drafting the SBO trust? Let's dive into that a little bit. Are there any specific items or specific clauses that you include with your trust to kind of provide better protection for your clients?
Yes. So one big one is obviously the protection of how much time you're going to have that is unavailable to you, because that's what gets you eligible for the program. I like to use a conservative 6 months as my timeline, basically. If it's a really messy trust, I might do 8 months, but it has to be under a year so they can get their distributions within annual payment. For me, the reason I use a more conservative number is I want them to be able to apply, handle any cleanup appeals, and still have that restricted amount, because that's what they're looking for when they're reviewing it for Medicaid eligibility. As soon as the approval is clean and gone through, then I can have that trust be available again and pay out distribution. So I want to set it at a reasonable number that's not going to have big impacts on my spouse. One thing that I do write into the trust, though, is after that period of time has passed, the access can be accelerated. So the trust itself has to pay out in required minimum distributions over the spouse's lifetime. That's a requirement in policy. Similar to a annuity, but not monthly. It doesn't have to be monthly, so they can do annual payments. Okay, well, that's great, but I have the flexibility to add into my trust that I could pay more than the required minimum distribution. It doesn't have to be those equal monthly payments like an annuity would be. So in a sense, I could get them eligible, have it restricted for 6 months, and then in the seventh month, I could technically give it all back and say, okay, now that trust goes away and my spouse has everything they need. Probably wouldn't do that, because it's kind of like spitting in the face of Medicaid if I use this trick. So I usually like to have that language in there for circumstances like the nursing home spouse died. It doesn't make sense to continue to be eligible for Medicaid. Or circumstances of change in a community spouse's needs more support. So that clause is in there and can be used whatever is appropriate, but it's really nice to have that additional ability to access more money in the trust.
Okay, that's really good information. I wasn't aware of some of that. So what about naming a trustee of an SBO trust? What happens if the trustee doesn't fulfill the obligations, doesn't act accordingly, and who are you naming?
So it's actually an interesting point when you compare the two, because the annuity comes with a professional who's going to do the job you asked of them to the T, right? And when you name a trustee, you're naming somebody that you trust to act in the way that you've instructed them to, but it's a little bit harder to hold them to it. It's not that there isn't liability for trustee. You always have the option of taking them to court, right? If they steal your money, you're in big trouble. And you can go after them, you can get it, but it's just more work than, say, an annuity who doesn't pay out their check on time. So there's that situation. A lot of times people are naming someone that's very close to them, typically a child, someone who's involved in understanding the Medicaid process. So in the sense of they know why it's happening, they know the attorney is going to tell them, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do this, and then the trust is closed. And so it's very guided by the attorney, because it's such a temporary quick fix to the Medicaid issue. It's not really a long-term estate plan. It doesn't have the same kind of burden on the kid, if you will. A lot of times they're picking somebody like that, but they can pick anyone they want. It just can't be themselves, and it shouldn't be the nursing home spouse or the sick applicant spouse either. But otherwise, they have the discretion to choose who they want, and they can be pretty, it's all discretionary. So it gives that trustee the ability to distribute how they want, but it should be a good relationship between the two, where the spouse can say, you know, now's the time that I think it's appropriate to give me everything back. And I would assume that the trustee would say, sure, there's no reason not to.
Okay. And we had spoken before too, do they need to be in the same state, the trustee and the Medicaid applicant, or can they be across the country?
Yes, thanks for reminding me that. That's a good point. These days with finances, it's so easy for a trustee to be somebody who's not available one-on-one. So we do have a lot of people name a kid who might not be in the exact state, but is involved, is capable of using technology. So it makes it very easy for them to distribute money to the spouse, to talk with the attorney, and all of those things that would come with it. Doesn't make a difference that they're far away.
Perfect. With either of these spend down strategies, whether it's with the annuity or the SBO trust, are you receiving any sort of increased scrutiny or any sort of pushback from the Medicaid department with either of these strategies?
As of right now, I really am not. There's something to be said about the fact that we're in a public health emergency, so they've probably got plenty on their plates instead of dealing with these issues. Maybe that'll change in the next year. But as of right now, the SBO Trust, since they had a little bit of a rocky period in Michigan, they've really settled back into normal use, and I haven't had any pushback on my trusts at all. As far as the annuities, I've found that to be very consistent. The only time I might want to be careful with them is depending on who I'm using. I want to make sure it's somebody that they're comfortable with and the terms of the contract are good. And so that's why I want some knowledge about the provider so that I know that my contract will pass. But otherwise, as long as they meet the requirements, they aren't getting any pushback.
Excellent. We love hearing that. It's great news.
Yeah, we do too.
So you had just touched on this a little bit. So SBO trusts have some history in the courts with how they've been treated by the department. Do you or your clients ever have any sort of concerns that the department might change their stance on it and start treating SBO trusts as a divestment or anything like that?
I mean, not even relevant to just the trusts. I think the trust, what happened with SBO trusts is just a good example for myself and clients to be well aware that unfortunately the department might not always act as expected. To me, that was, and how the court hearing turned out is, they just didn't follow their own policy. And it took over 4 years to hold them accountable to that, which is terrible. And for clients, that can have a really, really negative impact. And for attorneys who are trying their best to plan within the laws that are there, there's no way that they could ever anticipate that problem. So it just gives me the forewarning to talk to my clients about what the situation is with the department, is that there's always a chance that they just don't do what they're supposed to do and we have to deal with it. But as far as the trusts themselves, I don't worry too much about those because they could always do that to something else. They could attack anything at any time. They don't like the trusts because I think they're very easy and they're very useful in Medicaid planning. So maybe it's an easier target in that sense, but we've already won on that issue. So they'd have to find another issue. They've raised whether they think it's divestment, but I don't see a legal argument to be made there that it would be divestment to transfer something to a spouse. It's clearly right there in policy that it's allowed. So you're just kind of setting yourself up to say, if they create a hurdle out of thin air, then we have to work with it. But otherwise, as far as the plan that we have in front of us, it's legal, it works. If we get surprised, we get surprised, but it could have been from any.
That's true. And that's sometimes part of the risk, is that the policy can change at any time, but as long as it's working right now, it's perfect.
Yeah. And if the policy changes, they have to tell us about it, but it's the interpretation sometimes that they just change without warning. That's where it's scary.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for being here today. I think the information you included in this interview is going to be very valuable to our viewers. For anybody watching that would like to get in touch with you or has some more questions about using these trusts, how can they find you?
So our website is mi.michiganelderlaw.com, and you can always reach out. My email is just going to be schalgen, my last name, at mielderlaw.com. So I'm happy to answer emails, phone calls. Anyone at our office is willing to do so as well. We really specialize in this area, so if anyone has those issues, we're happy to help as much as we can.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it. And we will link your contact information at the end of this interview. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you. Bye.